Sarah from The Journey, and welcome to another expert special. Now, I'm not going to lie, this expert special is probably one that I have been most excited about ever. It is with one of my personal heroes, somebody whose work I have looked at for a long time, and this is Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride. Now, if you've been following what we do, you'll know we're pretty intrigued with all the work that's going around about the gut microbiome and its role not only in human health, but in particular around conception, hormones, and development of a small person. Now, Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride is one of the pioneers of this. She's a medical doctor, neurologist, and a neurosurgeon, and her own journey led her to develop what is known as the GAPS protocol, which is all about how we can use and influence health, particularly around neurological health in children and adults, and then things like autoimmune conditions. So without further ado, it's over to Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride, and I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Dr. Natasha, thank you so much for joining us. We're enormously thrilled to have you. I was just wondering, could you start off by giving us a quick little idea of how you started and how you came to be such a specialist in this field?
Hello, I'm a mainstream doctor, and I was very mainstream. I trained as a neurologist and worked in neurology until I had my first child. And I believe now that children come to us as teachers. They come, we parents teach them mundane things. How to live in this world, how to dress, how to eat, how to behave, and how to drive a car, where the children teach us the most profound universal truths. So my first little boy presented me with autism. At the age of 3, he was diagnosed with autism. And that threw me into a very steep learning curve. Very quickly, I realized that my own profession had absolutely nothing to offer my precious child. So I had to find solutions elsewhere. I went back to university, I studied nutrition, I got a master's degree in human nutrition, and combining all my skills and learning, I have managed to pull him out of autism. Today he's a 27-year-old healthy young man leading a normal life, and that taught me very profound things. And as I was working with other families, that's how my clinic evolved and grew. I worked with tens of thousands of autistic children, and I realized that their siblings are not healthy either. Many siblings of autistic children have problems too, and the parents have health problems as well. And that's how the whole concept evolved, which I have created. I'm the creator of the GAPS nutritional protocol, GAPS concept. GAPS stands for gut and psychology syndrome and gut and physiology syndrome. Both abbreviate to the same GAPS in the English language. What it means, we deal with a person who has abnormal gut flora. Gut flora is a mass of microbes that live inside our digestive system. And the recent research has discovered the fact that 90% of all cells in the human body are in our gut flora. 90%.
Wow.
That means your body is only 10%. It's a shell, a habitat for this mass of microbes that live inside us. And it's a highly complex and amazing microbial world where we have fungi and bacteria and viruses and protozoa and archaea and worms and flukes and all kinds of creatures living together in harmony. They all plant each other, harvest each other, eat each other, control each other. When the whole community is balanced, all of these creatures support us. They do us good. They make sure that we digest our food properly. They maintain the health and integrity of our digestive system. They produce a whole flow of hormones. In fact, recent research has now established the fact that our gut flora is the biggest endocrine organ in our bodies. All of these microbes produce hormones. These hormones absorb into our bloodstream and regulate our hormonal balance in the body. That is why every person with abnormal gut flora has abnormal hormonal balance in their body. They are the major source of neurotransmitters for us. These are chemicals that the brain uses and the rest of the nervous system uses. So when the gut flora is abnormal, we're unable to produce normal amounts of neurotransmitters, such as serotonin, dopamine, endorphins, GABA, and other very, very important, powerful molecules. And when these things are abnormal, your nervous system cannot work properly. It receives abnormal stimulation, abnormal signaling, and many, many other things. But what happens in a child with autism, with hyperactivity, with dyslexia, with dyspraxia, with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, epilepsy, and many, many other problems that our children are facing now, increasingly in the Western world, they acquire abnormal gut flora from their parents from day one, from the beginning of their lives. The way Mother Nature created it, that both the mother and the father pass their gut flora to the baby at the moment of birth. Babies start acquiring gut flora in utero already because nothing is sterile in the human body, and the woman has flora living in her uterus. Placenta has its own placental microbial flora. Our abdominal cavity has flora, fallopian tubes, everything has flora. So the baby already has some microbes when the baby is ready to be born. But at the moment of birth, when the child goes through the birth canal, major acquisition of gut flora happens in a newborn baby. Whatever flora lives in the mother's vagina, that's what the baby swallows, and that's what becomes the bulk of the baby's gut flora. Where does the vaginal gut flora come from? It comes from two places. One is the woman's bowel. So if the woman has abnormal gut flora, she will have abnormal flora in her birth canal, in her vagina. The second source is the father. If the father has abnormal gut flora, that flora travels out of his bowel, populates his groin, all the organs in that area, and he shares that flora with the mother on a regular basis through sexual contact. So that's how both the mother and the father pass their gut flora to the baby at the moment of birth.
Can I just ask you a quick question? How did you start to understand this was an issue or this is so important? Because I guess when you started out, you were talking about how the fact that you were a conventional doctor, you studying neurology, and then you made the switch once you had a son that was autistic. And you switched into nutrition. What was it that made you realize that actually this the gut was the key? What was that kind of turning point for you?
Well, I'm a Soviet doctor. I was trained in the Soviet Union. And when my child was about 1 year old, I moved to the UK, to England, and that's where I reside now and have lived here for a long time. So in the Soviet Union, that was the country where gut flora has been studied for some 70, 80 years because it was first discovered by a Russian scientist, Mechnikov, before the revolution at the beginning of the 20th century. He discovered gut flora. And his research carried on in the Soviet Union. Huge amount of research has been done. So studying medicine at the medical school, we already studied gut flora. We knew about it. We had probiotics that were manufactured in the Soviet Union that were used in our clinical practice. So I was familiar with that situation. My child had severe digestive problems right from the beginning of his life. Very severe. And I had no doubt that these digestive problems caused his autism. What happens in autistic children? They acquire abnormal gut flora from their parents from day one. That abnormal mixture of microbes damages the integrity of the gut wall. The gut wall becomes porous and leaky. They digest the food in their own way, including the breast milk, because my child was exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months. They digest the breast milk in their own sweet way, converting it into millions of poisonous chemicals. These chemicals absorb into the bloodstream, get distributed around the body, and they get into the brain of a developing child. How do babies learn? Babies use their sensory organs to collect information from the environment. They use their ears, they listen to everybody. They use their eyes, they stare at everybody, trying to figure you out. They touch everything using their tactile sensitivity. They bring everything to their nose, to their mouth, using their smell receptors, their taste receptors. What are they doing? They're using their sensory organs to collect information. And then this information is passed to the brain to be processed. And from that information, the child learns that this is mommy, this is daddy, I can trust them. This is a toy, I play with it like that. This is food, I eat it. These are other children, I copied them. But if the child's brain is clogged with toxicity, and a river of toxicity comes out of the digestive system of these children and gets into the brain, then that brain cannot process information properly. Information from sensory organs just turns into a noise, into a mush in the child's brain. And as a result, the child doesn't learn from that information. Autistic children are known to pick up a hand of any stranger on the street and try to walk away with this person. My son had that problem with mommy running behind and screaming his name because mommy and daddy do not mean any more than any other human being around. They don't know what to do with toys. They don't know what to do with food, what to do with other children. They just develop in an autistic fashion. If the mixture of toxicity that clogs the brain of the child is different, constitution of the child is different, then the child may not become autistic, but will become hyperactive, have attention deficit disorder, dyslexia, dyspraxia, oppositional defiant disorder, or something else. And all of these children are unique. They have unique gut flora, unique constitution, unique mixture of toxicity bombarding the brain. That is why none of them really fit into any diagnostic box created by our mainstream medicine. Because these diagnostic boxes are purely descriptive. They just take a bunch of symptoms, put them into a box, and call that box autism. Another bunch of symptoms went into another box, and that box was called ADHD. Where in reality, every child has a little bit of autism, a bit of ADHD, a bit of dyslexia, a bit of dyspraxia, a bit of something else. And none of it fits into any diagnostic box neatly. That is why with many of these children, pediatricians take a long time to give them diagnosis. And I tell the parents, don't wait for the diagnosis, because the diagnosis is not going to help your child in any possible way. Start the GAPS nutritional protocol. What we do with the GAPS protocol? We change the gut flora of the child. We drive out pathogens and reestablish normal, healthy community of microbes in the gut of the child. We heal and seal the gut wall. We close all those holes in the gut wall. And as a result, that river of toxicity coming from the gut stops. And when that river of toxicity stops, the brain cleanses itself. Human brain has a wonderful ability to clean itself. It does it all the time. The whole of human body has a wonderful ability to clean itself. All our organs, all our cells, they clean themselves all the time. And once the brain cleanses itself, it starts, the child comes out of that toxic fog, and the child, as if the child wakes up and the child starts developing normally, starts learning, starts using the sensory organs appropriately, and starts developing normally.
Can I just ask a question?
To just finish this. Okay. The younger this child is when this moment happens, the quicker the child recovers and the more fully the child recovers. Because from my clinical perspective and from the clinical perspective of many other doctors around the world, almost 100% of our modern autistic children, hyperactive children, and children with other mental problems are born with a perfectly normal brain. These were perfectly normal babies when they were born. But because they acquired abnormal gut flora from their parents from day one, that gut flora poisoned their brain. These were normal babies that they got poisoned. As a result, they develop autism, they develop ADHD, they develop ADD. The longer this poisoning continues, this bombardment of toxicity, the more physical damage is inflicted upon the brain, and the more difficult it is to reverse. The younger the child is, the less time the child spent in that toxic fog, the quicker they recover, and the more fully they recover. This toxicity bombarding the brain of the child causes inflammation in the brain. The brain swells. Immune system, of course, comes in there, tries to deal with this situation. It causes inflammation in the brain. If this situation goes longer than 2-3 months, the immune system will then learn about these toxins and start producing antibodies against them. So there is an autoimmune component going on as well. And it is quite often the inflammation and the autoimmunity that starts inflicting physical damage to the brain of the child, making the disorder long-term and chronic. So up to the age of 4.5, maybe 5, in my experience, the child can shake autism off completely. Entirely. All the children will all improve, even adults in their 30s and 40s with severe autism improve on the GAPS protocol. Now, from my point of view, the GAPS protocol is the only appropriate protocol, nutritional protocol for these patients. So, but the improvement will be partial. Autism will not be gone 100%. But you can never predict to what degree the child will recover. It's very, very individual. I have seen children who were 8, 9 when they started the GAPS nutritional protocol, and they've improved dramatically, up to 80%, to, you know, sometimes 70% autism goes. So the child will still be eccentric. There will still be some autistic features left, but the child can function and live in this world and have a more or less functional life.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, one of the questions I was going to ask you is, there seems to be some kind of question mark in science at the moment about what constitutes a normal and healthy gut microbiome. And you reference a lot, picking up abnormal or unhealthy microbes from the parents, and this being effectively the cause. Now, how do you perceive a healthy microbiome to look? So when you're doing this rebalancing via the gut, the GAPS protocol, what is it that you're looking to achieve? And do you actually test an individual child's microbiome, or is it just enough that they're presenting with these symptoms to give you an indication that this is abnormal?
What we have to understand that we cannot rely on science. Science is in its infancy in understanding our microbiome. It only started studying it a few years ago, in the West, certainly. And even in the Soviet Union and Finland and Vietnam, where studies have been going on for decades, we still don't know a lot about it. And so far, the Western science focused on bacteria in the microbiome. That's all they've been studying so far. Bacteria, as if there is nothing else there. If you look at nature, the basis of every microbial community in nature are fungi, not bacteria. Fungi. Fungi create, grow this long micelli, many meters long micelli. And these micelli, like channels, like canals, they're about 100 times bigger than the size of bacteria. They provide a roadwork in our gut flora, motorways, lanes, streets, roads. And along this roadwork, the bacteria build their little homes. Viruses build their little homes, which are another degree smaller. And protozoa are there traveling along this mycelial network. And along this mycelial network, nutrients and water are delivered to the homes of bacteria and other creatures. And wastes are removed. So the basis of every microbial community are fungi, and they are the basis of our gut flora. Our science in the West hasn't even got a clue about this yet. They haven't even started researching that yet. They don't know about it. The testing for gut flora is almost a waste of time, I'm afraid. The only thing we can test is the stool. The stool is what the body is discarding. And the fact that there are large numbers of bacteria in the stool means that the body is discarding them for some reason. Stool does not represent our resident gut flora, which lives on the gut wall, because the gut wall is not like an even floor. It's got deep crypts, deep channels, deep crevices, villi, microvilli, all sorts of amazing terrain in there. And in all of these deep places, these little caves and hideaway places, that's where our resident gut flora lives. And nobody's researching that. And the basis of it is fungi, and then there are viruses there. Viruses are very important because they eat bacteria. They control bacteria, the viruses, and they eat fungi, and the fungi eat viruses. And all of these creatures produce sticky substances to create little homes for themselves, because no creature in this world can live without a shelter. So they produce sticky proteins, lipoproteins, which create little homes for themselves. All these homes are mixed with each other, all these sticky secretions are mixed with each other, creating a so-called biofilm. And in that biofilm live that microbial community. The only way to study it is by biopsy, taking a sample of the gut lining and then studying it under the microscope, and studying it under the microscope, which can show us living microbes. Our modern scientist only uses microscopes which we kill microbes first and then stain them and then study them. How can you study a living human body by killing a human body, for example, and then studying it under the microscope?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
You'll get completely wrong information. So you cannot rely on science, and you cannot rely on testing. The only thing we can rely upon truly is Mother Nature. Human body is part of Mother Nature. Nature has created human body, and it took billions of years in creating it. Every little bit, every little biochemical process has been worked out very, very carefully. So that is what the GAPS nutritional protocol is based upon natural approaches and the way nature works. So we use clinical data, we use clinical observation. I don't need to do any studies, any testing when I see a child or an adult. Just by examining the person and getting the clinical information and getting the story of the disease, how it developed, what symptoms the person has, gives me plenty of information to know that the gut flora is abnormal and that we need to deal with it.
Now, what do you think? So obviously the genesis comes from the parents, and obviously that comes from their parents before them. What is it that you think are some of the root causes to causing this kind of abnormal microflora that lives within our guts that then get passed on and passed on? What are some of the main factors that you think, especially in our modern lives, that contribute to this kind of dysbiosis, for want of a better term?
That's a very good question. Before I talk about the health of a child in my clinic, I always collect full data on the health of the parents and grandparents on both sides. And a typical picture has emerged. The grandparents were born somewhere around the Second World War, maybe before it, maybe during it, maybe after it. That was the time, if you think about it, when the whole planet was organic.
Yeah.
There was no chemical agriculture. There was no pharmaceutical industry. There were no vaccinations. These people went through all the childhood infections, which are essential to properly mature the immune system of the child. Children must go through these infections. They're important for us. Measles, mumps, rubella, and also all other things. All of these people went through these infections. Their immune system got properly matured. And most importantly, they received healthy, balanced gut flora from their parents. But then antibiotics were discovered during the Second World War, and they came onto the market in the 50s and the 60s. So these people received maybe a couple of courses of antibiotics for common colds or infections. Antibiotics kill bacteria, only bacteria. So they wipe out every course of wide spectrum antibiotic, wipes out bacteria in the gut and elsewhere in the body too. These bacteria were eating fungi, eating viruses, eating protozoa, controlling them. So suddenly all these other creatures, which are not touched by antibiotics, get out of control. And they start overgrowing. And they start taking over large niches in the digestive tract. Our bacteria do recover, but it takes different species between 2 weeks to 2 months to recover. And that's a special window of opportunity for the other creatures to establish themselves. And once they've grown many, many babies and multiplied, it's very difficult to drive them out of those niches. So from a course of antibiotic to the next course of antibiotic, there's less and less good left in the gut flora, less and less balance and harmony left in that microbial community, and more imbalance and overgrowth of fungi, protozoa, viruses, and other creatures in there. So these may be a couple of courses of antibiotics in the grandparent generation damaged their gut flora a little bit, which didn't show up in any symptoms or anything else. Then this generation of people passed their slightly damaged gut flora to their children at the moment of birth. Then their children grew up in a very different world. They grew up in a world where antibiotics were given to them for every cough and sneeze throughout their childhood and teenage years, damaging their gut flora. They grew up in a world where industrial agriculture appeared on the planet. So all the foods increasingly started containing damaging agricultural chemicals. Majority of agricultural chemicals are antibiotics in their nature. Today, we have maximum of agricultural chemicals in all the foods that are sold in our supermarkets. So every time we eat food, we're eating antibiotics, and they're damaging our gut flora. This generation of people grew up in the world where vaccinations came in. So their immune systems were not allowed to develop properly. Then girls in that generation were put on a contraceptive pill at the age of 15, 16, which they took for quite a few years before they were ready to start their family. Contraceptive pill has a devastating effect on the gut flora in the person. So by the time this generation of people decided to have their baby, their gut flora is seriously damaged. And that is what they passed to their baby at the moment of birth. This situation is getting deeper and deeper, worse and worse with every generation, every year. The young ladies that I've seen in my clinic 5 years ago, even 5 years ago, who were having their first babies had a little bit better gut flora to pass to their babies than the young ladies who are having their babies today. This whole situation is accelerating. And this is the epidemic of gaps. And it is the root cause underneath all other epidemics that we have. Because all disease begins in the gut. Every illness begins in the gut, whether it is a mental illness, learning disability, allergy, asthma, eczema, autoimmune illnesses, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, myalgic encephalomyelitis, neurological illnesses, hormonal illnesses, skin illnesses, chronic cystitis, anything. All of it begins in the gut. And all of these conditions are gaining epidemic proportions. We have an absolute disaster with autism. Let's come back to our poor autistic children. It's an absolute disaster. These babies are born with normal brains and they get getting poisoned at an increasing level. When I just started practicing as a medical doctor, the whole world was diagnosing one child in 10,000 with autism. This disorder was so rare. Our teachers in psychiatry didn't have anybody to show us, to demonstrate to us. Vast majority of the population of the planet never heard the word autism. Nobody knew about it. Today, in the English-speaking countries, we're diagnosing one child in 35. Mm. And the researchers have already projected that line. They're predicting that between 2020 and 2030, we'll start diagnosing one child in two. Half of our children will be autistic. And that line is not going to stop there. It'll continue climbing until every child is pretty much autistic. The other half of the children in the 2020s and 25 are not going to be healthy either. They're going to have ADHD, ADD, asthma, eczema, diabetes type 1 is an absolute rampage. We're diagnosing babies with diabetes type 1, exclusively breastfed babies. And that proportion is growing tremendously. Allergies, rheumatoid arthritis, autoimmune illnesses in our children. We are moving to a situation where there will be no healthy children at all. And the big question is, who's going to look after them? No. Who is going to look after this population? And it's the English-speaking countries, UK, America, Canada, and Australia, that are the forefront of these epidemics. Their children are being decimated at the highest rate. Other countries in the world are following behind. European community, European countries are slightly behind different countries. And third world countries are further behind. But they are catching up because all of these countries are adopting our Western lifestyles.
So one of the things you talked about, which is, and I've looked into a lot of the factors quite extensively, but one I did not know about was you talked about the contraceptive pill. And obviously, as you say, this really kind of started to take off in the 60s, 70s. What is it about the contraceptive pill that damages the gut microflora? Because obviously, I can completely understand how, you know, antibiotics can cause havoc. What is it about the contraceptive pill and I guess other prescription medications, which are just massively on the rise as well? What is it specifically about that that causes imbalances to occur?
Contraceptive pill is hormones. These hormones affect our hormonal balance and they affect the hormonal balance of every microbe in our gut because all of these microbes have their own hormonal balances. It reduces fertility in certain bacteria, in certain microbes, while allowing other microbes, which are not affected the same way, to multiply. So it introduces disbalance, disharmony into that whole microbial community. Remember, I told you that our gut flora is the biggest endocrine organ in the human body because all of those creatures in our gut produce their own hormones. They have their own hormonal balance. Contraceptive pill doesn't just affect your hormones, it affects their hormonal balances. Hormones are the rulers of metabolism. They affect us on the deepest level, on the level of every cell, every function, every organ in the body. So the damage is extremely deep to the woman's body, and then that translates to the child's body.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess prescription drugs, because as you say, I guess what's happening in a lot of Western medicine, what they try and do is to treat the symptom rather than address the underlying cause. And that can obviously make things a lot worse. So, you know, we have this huge proliferation of, you know, deep anxiety and ADHD and all these kind of things. And some of these factors. So, you know, I was reading the other day that the level of prescription of antidepressants, for example, is just continuing to climb. But surely drugs like that will only make the incidents worse, would you say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All of these drugs, they interfere in on many levels in the body, and they are just designed to mask symptoms. You know, there is a place for all forms of healing in our world. Our mainstream medicine developed wonderful ways of dealing with emergencies, with life and death situations. If you got run over by a bus, you wouldn't want an ambulance to take you to your homeopath, would you?
No, definitely not.
No, you will need mainstream medicine and fast, because they are the ones that have all the tools and all the ability to save your life when it comes to that. But when it comes to chronic degenerative conditions, our mainstream medicine is not designed, not developed, not structured to deal with these conditions. First of all, mainstream doctors are simply not allowed to know what causes these disorders. We do know what causes them, but we know that in the alternative medicines, mainstream medicine is controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, and that pharmaceutical industry is not interested in doctors knowing what actually causes chronic illnesses. So mainstream doctors are not trained to know what causes chronic illnesses, and they are not trained to cure them, to deal with them. They only train to control symptoms, because that sells the most drugs. So when it's a chronic condition you're dealing with, the mainstream doctor is the last person you want to go to, honestly. Mm. You need an alternative practitioner. You need a holistic doctor. You need a homeopath. You need a naturopath. You need an osteopath. You need a nutritionist. These people will know what causes the disorder in you or your child, or will know how to go about addressing that disorder from the root cause, to uproot it, to remove it.
So on that, you talk about this kind of growing epidemic, which makes an awful lot of sense, because by generation, it's becoming compounded. Now, because some people who listen to our podcast are trying to get pregnant, or they are pregnant, and obviously, as you say, it starts even, you know, a baby's gut microbiome starts to build in utero, and then obviously it really starts to accelerate from birth onwards. Now, if you were talking to a pregnant person right now who wanted to kind of break their cycle, how, because obviously you've done amazing things with treating children who are presenting with these symptoms, but what about kind of stopping it the level before? What would you say to a pregnant woman who wanted to kind of get her own microbiome in a much better state? How would you actually approach that? Because surely then that is kind of trying to break this cycle.
Before we talk about pregnancy, I would like to talk about preconception.
Yeah.
It is not wise in our modern world, particularly in the English-speaking countries, for the young couple to just get pregnant without thinking about it, unconsciously. We need to become conscious of this situation. We have to have conscious preconception and conscious pregnancy. You can't just let it flow like the previous generations could do, and they got away with it because they lived in a different world and had different constitution. Today, we cannot do that. Because apart from the gut flora that the parents pass to their child, and they must, for at least a year before getting pregnant, they must straighten up their gut flora. They must do that because that's very important. That is what they're passing to their child, and that is the biggest chunk of the child's constitution they're passing. They need to take steps in straightening up their gut flora. Second thing is the toxic load that the mother passes to her child during pregnancy. It sounds cruel, it sounds unfair, but the way Mother Nature designed the woman's body is that it uses pregnancy as the chance to clean up by dumping toxins into the fetus, into the baby. We live in a world where women accumulate increasing amounts of man-made chemicals from birth, pretty much, in the form of our shampoos, deodorants, our makeup, our hair dyes, our nails, our lotions and potions that we all apply all over ourselves from the vanity industry. Our chemical industry invented some 100,000 new chemicals which don't exist in nature. Human body is part of nature. It doesn't have solid mechanisms for neutralizing and removing these chemicals. That is why a large percent of these chemicals get simply stored in our fat tissues, in various tissues in the body. Human body, human skin is not a barrier, it is a sponge. Everything we put on our skin absorbs in seconds. It's in your blood in seconds. When you put a deodorant under your armpit, you can taste it in your mouth in seconds because the chemicals are already in your blood and already in your saliva. and the body doesn't know what to do with them. So our women in the Western world, by the time she's ready to have her first child, her body is a toxic dump. It is full of chemicals. And when she gets pregnant, her body thinks, great, I'll clean up. And it dumps the lot into the fetus. If this toxicity is enough to kill the baby, the woman will have a miscarriage or a stillbirth. We have an epidemic of miscarriages. Every year, you know, many women go through 1, 2, 3 miscarriages before she's able to produce a viable body for her baby. If the woman doesn't have enough toxicity to kill the baby, then her first child will be born with a very high toxic load. She'll clean up on her first child. And indeed, if a child is born with this high toxic load, the child's body is full of toxicity, full of mercury, lead, aluminium, petrochemicals, all kinds of stuff, then of course the constitution of this child will be compromised. Of course the immune system will not work properly. Of course this child will develop complications from vaccinations. And of course this child will develop autism, ADHD, diabetes type 1, asthma, eczema, allergies, you name it, anything. And if you look at the statistics of all of these disasters with our children, it is majority, vast majority of them are first born in the family. Because the woman cleaned up on that child, and for the following pregnancies, she had cleaner body, and as a result, the following children in the family are healthy and stronger and do not have autism, and generally speaking, are doing better. If a woman has exposed herself to a large amount of toxicity between pregnancies, then the following children will also be born with a high toxic load. The father also unloads his toxicity through sperm. Semen is a major venue for the man's body to clean itself. So that's how he contributes his toxicity to the child by putting semen into the woman's body, and the woman's vagina absorbs all that very rapidly. So that's how parents pass their toxic load. So these two factors of abnormal gut flora and high level of toxicity, they are now very, very important for causing the epidemics in our children. So today, for young couples to just get pregnant unconsciously is not a clever thing to do. We have to take at least a year to clean our bodies and to normalize our gut flora.
And how would you actually...
I have a chapter, let me just finish. I have a chapter in my book, it's part 4, which is called Preconception, Pregnancy and New Baby. Please read that part. I outline there what the couple needs to do to cleanse their bodies, to remove that toxic burden from their bodies so they're not unloading it into the baby, and to normalize their gut flora.
Which book, because you've written a few, so which book should we be turning to? Because I'll put all the links to this on all the show notes and on the piece that we write about this. So which book should we be looking for that section in?
This is my first book called GAPS, Gut and Psychology Syndrome. You will find all the information about these books on gaps.me. That's my website, gaps.me.
We'll put that up on the notes. Now, when it comes to all the kind of toxicity that you talk about, you know, particularly in the kind of very unregulated beauty industry, what do you yourself use? Do you just avoid things using a lot of products? Do you use unscented? When it comes to your own body, how do you kind of navigate all of this?
For GAPS patients, for people with any kind of illness in this world, the rule is if you can't eat it, you can't apply it to your skin.
Okay.
Because your skin will eat it. Your skin will absorb it in seconds. Only edible, natural things can be put on your scalp, on your skin, on your teeth, in your mouth, anywhere on your body. So what we do, what I recommend in my clinic for my patients, and I have thousands of people all over the world who are using these approaches, we wash our hair with raw egg yolks. You separate egg yolks from the whites and you use them instead of shampoo. Works beautifully. That's how ladies used to wash their hair for hundreds of years before we invented shampoos. We brush our teeth with olive oil. Occasionally, we can brush it with bentonite clay or charcoal tablets. You can buy activated charcoal. You can use that occasionally to whiten your teeth. But daily olive oil, coconut oil, you just dip your toothbrush into olive oil in your brush normally. That will keep your teeth clean and it detoxifies the mouth. Because while you're brushing, while you've got the olive oil in your mouth, the rich capillary bed of blood vessels in the mouth, on your gums, in your cheeks, everywhere, brings all the toxicity there, and the toxins just accumulate in that olive oil. So you spit it out and you wash it out afterwards from your mouth. We use only edible oils and fats for our skin. We use olive oil as a moisturizer, coconut oil, butter can be used, ghee can be used, and an absolute medicine for eczema, psoriasis, any dry skin, any other kind of skin is tallow, homemade tallow. Tallow is made from the inner fat of grass-fed animals. So go to your local butcher and ask him to give you the fat from a purely grass-fed lamb or beef, from the inner body, from inside the body, the heart, the fat around the kidneys of the animal, around the intestines of the animal, the fat around the heart of the animal, because the composition of the fat is very different than the underskin fat. You bring that big slab home, you put it in the oven at a low temperature, about 110, 120 degrees centigrade, and leave it there for a few hours. It will melt yellow, rich fat, absolutely delicious. That fat is the best medicine for skin, for any kind of dry skin conditions, autoimmune skin conditions, any other conditions. The problem with tallow is that it sets rock hard in the fridge. So what we do, we pour this fat into glass jars. Never use plastic because plastic leaches, plasticizes into fats. Pour it into glass jars and leave about a third of the jar empty. When the fat has cooled down, but it's still liquid, add some olive oil to it. Add a few drops of lavender essential oil or any other nice essential oil that you like the smell of. Mix it and put it in the fridge. You will make a gourmet, the best quality skin cream for yourself.
Wow, that's amazing. We'll definitely be trying that. And we'll put all the steps of this as well on the show notes so people can do this at home themselves. Now, you talked about obviously eczema and some of these kind of autoimmune conditions that are just rife. And earlier on when we started to talk about this, you know, you talked about this ultimately being a product of inflammation and inflammation kind of damaging tissues. And as you say, there is an awful lot of autoimmunity coming on everywhere within adults, children, everything. So would you say that the best way to kind of deal with this once again is literally going back to the basis of rectifying the gut flora? So I guess my question would be, if you have a child who has, you know, serious allergies or intolerances, is it again just going straight to the GAPS protocol? And is that the best way, in your opinion, to deal with it?
Absolutely. Asthma, eczema, psoriasis are GAPS conditions. Our skin has a flora, a rich microbial flora on it. And the skin works very hard to produce oily secretions to support that gut flora, to give it habitat. That is why we must never ever wash our skin with any soap of any description, shower gels, bubble baths, anything, none of that. Because it washes off the habitat for the microbes. And people keep doing that on their babies, washing that off. When that river of toxicity comes out of the gut in a child or an adult with abnormal gut flora, the body then tries to get rid of it. And there are many venues for the body to remove toxicity out of itself. Sweating is one of the major venues. That is why eczema happens in the sweaty places, in the folds of the arms, behind the knees, on the neck, you know, in all the wet and sweaty places. So when this toxic river, this toxicity sweats out, the microbes act upon it on the skin. That changes the microbial community. And of course, the immune system always joins in. When the immune system joins in, that's when we get the redness, the itch, the swelling, and the typical patches of eczema or psoriasis or any other dermatitis in the person. It's the immune system that causes all these problems by trying to deal with the whole situation. And this microbial community on the skin, it starts changing under the influence of these toxins coming through in sweat and start producing their own toxicity. And the immune system deals with all of that, and that causes eczema. So long term, to get rid of eczema, we need to heal and seal the gut wall, stop that river of toxicity, and we need to normalize the balance of microbes in the gut. We need to rebalance the gut flora in the person. There are, I don't know how many people around the world who have healed from eczema with the GAPS nutritional protocol. You can find many, many testimonies online to that effect and on YouTube. Psoriasis, I'd like to mention that. Psoriasis has the same mechanism of development as cancer. What happens if this situation goes long term, when the toxicity is being removed through the skin, that grows fungi on the skin, because the fungi are the basis of any microbial community in nature. And we have fungi, specific species of fungi that live on our skin and maintain its health and its integrity. So when this toxicity comes out, the microbial community changes and fungi start growing and they start evolving and they start changing. And these fungi hijack the multiplication of skin cells. You know that the skin sheds itself all the time. It produces new cells. It gives birth to many, many trillions of new cells every day. These cells mature. They travel to the top of the skin and they get shed off. They get sloughed off as they get old and dry, these cells. And this microbial community that lives on the skin eats these cells, feeds on them. That is their habitat. That is their food. And what happens when these fungi overgrow? They hijack these cells, the birth of these cells, hijack the proliferation of them through changing the structure, the protein structure in the membrane cells of this, in the outer cell wall of these cells. And so these cells mutate. They become half fungal, half human. And as a result, they don't grow like human skin. They grow into this deformed patches of psoriasis in the person. These cells are not human. They are half fungal. That is why we have psoriasis. So in order to heal all of these situations, the toxicity comes out of the gut. I have patients with psoriasis, severe forms of psoriasis, who now have beautiful radiant skin. They're completely clean. They're completely clear, these people, completely healthy. So the first thing to fix is the gut wall. Seal and heal it. Change the gut flora so that river of toxicity stops. Once it stops, then the immune system will deal with the fungi. All these outer layers of psoriasis will shed off, will slough off. And the new cells that are born at the bottom of the skin, in the deep layers of the skin, will be born healthy again, not half fungal anymore. They will be human. And your skin will recover and your psoriasis will disappear, including psoriatic arthritis, including other systemic symptoms of psoriasis. I would like to mention another book here called Gaps Stories. This is a compilation of the recovery stories of 52 patients, half children, half stories are about children, half stories are about adults. And there are very good stories there about recovery from psoriasis and from many, many other conditions, which I have not mentioned in my GAPS book. Because when I was writing the GAPS book, I focused on learning disabilities in children and psychiatric illness. But people all over the world took that protocol and recovered from all kinds of illnesses. Chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, neuropathies, narcolepsy, alcoholism, allergies, autoimmune abnormalities, all kinds of problems. So we've collected some of these case studies and published them as a book called GAPS Stories.
Brilliant.
Please read that book. It will give you hope and it will show you that despite the fact that your disease might not be on the cover of my book, you should still try the GAPS nutritional protocol.
We'll put that link up as well on the notes. Now, the other, you talk a lot about sealing and healing the gut wall. And I know one of the things you talk about is using meat stock and bone broth. Can you talk to us a little bit about the difference, what you would go for and why this actually works so well?
Our digestive system is a long tube. What you fill that tube with has a direct effect on its well-being. So diet, GAPS diet, is a number one treatment. You cannot recover from any chronic disease without changing your diet and changing your lifestyle. What we do with the GAPS diet, we remove all foods that are difficult to digest, that are feeding pathogenic microbes in the gut, and that are damaging the gut wall, challenging it. So we remove all those foods. And we focus on the foods that provide concentrated amounts of nourishment for the gut wall. There is a wonderful process in the human body called cell regeneration. All cells in the human body live a short life. They work very hard, they get old, they get worn out, they die, and they get shed off and removed by the body. And to replace them, the body gives birth to a baby cell to replace it. This process is particularly rapid, particularly fast and active in the gut wall. So what we're doing with the GAPS diet, we are building new gut wall for the person. Because human body doesn't waste effort on healing sick cells. It just kills them, removes them, and replaces them with newly born baby cells. And what we need to produce trillions of new baby cells, we need building materials. Concentrated amounts of building materials to make these cells from something. And we need beneficial microbes to run the whole process because it's beneficial gut flora, our healthy gut flora, that is in charge of this cell regeneration process in the gut wall. And that is what we do with the GAPS diet. The basis, the staple in the GAPS diet is meat stock, not bone broth, please. There's a lot of misinformation about this and confusion. These are two different things. Meat stock. We take a large pan, we put a whole chicken in there, and if we are lucky, we find an organic farmer or another farmer where we can buy feet of the chickens, necks of the chickens, heads of the chickens, and giblets, because these produce the best stock. So we put all these bits, we put a whole chicken in the pan, we cover it with water, we add some salt and pepper, and we cook it for about 2-3 hours. That's all. The chicken cooked this way is delicious. It's a whole meal for the whole family. But the stock, the bouillon, as French will call it, is an absolute medicine for the digestive system because it contains gelatin, collagen, glucosamine, lipoproteins, and other things from which the body then makes these baby cells to replace the sick ones in the gut lining to rebuild your gut wall. So that's the chicken stock. Then we make lamb stock with lamb shanks, with lamb neck, with offcuts. There must be some bones and joints in there because the joints and the bones will contribute maximum collagen, maximum glucosamine, maximum of all these other building molecules. Because about a third of all protein in the human body is collagen. It's an elastic protein that holds human bodies together. And our joints, our bones, the skeleton of our muscles, our fascias, all the ligaments, and all the other supporting structures, which are called connective tissue in the body, is largely made out of collagen. Problem is, collagen in the human body is a magnet for toxicity. So a lot of these toxins that absorb from the gut, from the microbial activity in the gut, attach themselves to collagen molecules in the body, changing their three-dimensional structure. The immune system finds this changed collagen, looks at it, and says, "You're not mine. I don't recognize you as mine," and attacks it, destroys it. So many people with GAPS condition, toxic people, lose their collagen. Their joints become loose. They start developing osteoporosis. They start developing muscle wasting and other problems. And that covers all of the autoimmune illnesses, including neurological, hormonal illnesses, rheumatoid arthritis, all kinds of forms of arthritis in particular, because our joints are largely made out of collagen. So we have to replace all that collagen, replenish it. Meat stock made this way is rich in collagen. You pump in huge amounts. Every bowl of a soup that you make with a meat stock like that will provide you with a bottle of commercially bought supplement of collagen. It's the cheapest and the most effective way of replenishing the collagen in your body. And your gut lining is very rich in collagen, and it's necessary for building the cells that make your gut lining. So with lamb shank or with feet of the beef, bones of the beef, joints, with meat on it, and we want necks, and we want spine, and we want other parts of the animal, which are not expensive. We don't want the expensive steak. We don't want the expensive pure muscle because muscle is difficult to digest. What we want is connective tissue. We want joints with meat around. We want bones. We want all these offcuts and all these gelatinous, greasy bits. We put them in a pan again. For pork, beef, and lamb, you probably will need to cook for 3 hours to 4 hours. Again, cover with water, salt, pepper. You don't need anything else. If you want to throw a few vegetables in, go ahead, or spices if you would like spices. And that will produce a beautiful bouillon, beautiful meat stock. We call it meat stock. That meat stock, after you strained it, will keep in the fridge for 10 days at least. So we drink a cup of warmed up hot meat stock like that with every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And in between, if we want a warming drink, we make soup with it by taking a portion of that meat stock, adding vegetables to it and cooking these vegetables. And we're making stews with it. That is a staple in the GAPS diet. That will rebuild your gut lining. All these joints and bits of offcuts and meats that you've made the meat stock, you need to eat all those gelatinous parts. Gelatinous meats are the most nutritious and beneficial to health parts of the animal, and they are the cheapest. You can get them quite inexpensively from the butchers. They're not expensive. So these are the staples. So we strip the bones. When we make the soup, we cut all those soft tissues that we've taken off the bones and the joints. We bind the bone marrow out. That's an absolute medicine for your immune system. And we chop it into bite-sized pieces. And when we've made our soup, we return all that meat into the soup. So that is the real GAPS soup. It is not something that people in the English world think, you know, oh, soup. Because for them, soup is something coming out of a can, you know, with plastic lining that they warm up. It's an absolute abomination. No, the soup we're talking about is a real soup that people in traditional societies have been making for millennia, but people in the English-speaking world and other European countries have forgotten through generations now because of the activities of the food industry.
So say, for example, that you are, generally speaking, incredibly conscious of your gut microflora, and say, for example, you happen to get a serious infection, which means you do have to have a course of antibiotics. Would you say that the very first thing that you should be doing is going straight for this meat stock then, in order to kind of counterbalance some of the negative effects of having antibiotics?
Absolutely. Antibiotics are a life-saving medication. Of course, there are situations when they're necessary. Of course. But unfortunately, majority of prescriptions do not fit in that category. Majority of prescriptions are given just in case, to prevent something, for every cough and sneeze. People are overusing antibiotics. And also don't forget that majority of agricultural chemicals, our food is full of them, are antibiotics in their nature. They will have the same effect on your gut flora as the antibiotic that the doctor gives you. So we're all taking antibiotics all the time, and that is accumulating. The damage is accumulating from this sort of things. Apart from antibiotics, there are many other chemicals in our foods, in our processed foods in particular, which damage the balance in the gut flora, which do other damage in the gut flora. So whenever you need to take an antibiotic, read my book and go on the GAPS diet. Because another very important part of the GAPS diet are fermented foods. We ferment dairy, milk, we ferment vegetables, we ferment meat, we ferment fish, we ferment beans, we ferment pretty much everything. When you ferment foods, several things happen, and fermentation is not optional for the human beings. We must eat fermented foods on a daily basis, because for most of our existence on this planet, we didn't have refrigeration. And we didn't have supermarkets where you can buy anything out of season. Foods were seasonal, people produced their own food, and it was difficult to store food for a long period of time because there was no refrigeration. So people fermented everything. Fermentation preserves your food for many years. Fermented cabbage, sauerkraut will keep for 5-6 years at least, getting better every year and more beneficial for you every year. So apart from preserving the food very well, the process of fermentation, the microbes, when they work on the food, when they're fermenting it, they pre-digest the food. They release hard to digest nutrients into the mixture, making them bioavailable for us. For example, fresh cabbage has a lot of vitamin C in it. All vegetables have a lot of vitamin C in it. But in raw cabbage, and even in cooked cabbage, that vitamin is locked in the cellular structure of the cabbage, and our digestive system has no way of extracting it. It just goes through us and doesn't do us any good. When we ferment cabbage, the microbes release all that vitamin C into the mixture. They make it bioavailable. A helping of sauerkraut, fermented cabbage, will give you 20 times more bioavailable vitamin C to absorb immediately than the same helping of fresh cabbage. Just think about that.
That's so crazy. And
because people fermented everything around the world, they ate fermented food. A large part of their diet for breakfast, lunch, and dinner were fermented foods. Everything was fermented. Most of things were fermented, unless there was something fresh that they could get in season right now. That was an addition to their fermented diet. So people ate a lot of foods in a pre-digested state, and you get much more nourishing out of that fermented food than from a fresh food. The third part of fermentation is that these foods are teeming with beneficial microbes. These are probiotic foods, and this is the cheapest way of supplementing probiotics for yourself. Probiotics, you know, is a huge multi-billion market now that is sold everywhere. They're expensive. Many people can't afford to be buying them all the time. A helping of sauerkraut or a helping of yogurt, homemade yogurt or kefir or sour cream will give you several bottles of that commercial probiotics in one portion. You'll get much, much more. And they're alive and they're active and they're in their biofilm and they are in their in a food form. The food will protect them from damage from the stomach acid and will carry them all through your digestive system and allow them to survive and allow them to do maximum work.
I was going to ask, so what is your view on probiotic supplements, especially versus probiotic fermented food that you've been just discussing?
Probiotic supplementation are fermented foods in the GAPS diet, in the GAPS nutrition protocol. It is the least expensive and the most effective way of populating your digestive system with beneficial communities of microbes, because in a kefir, for example, as far as we know from limited research that we have from the Soviet Union, there are more than 200 different microbial species living in even together. There's fungi there, there's viruses there, there's bacteria there, there's protozoa there, there's all kinds of creatures that you're getting. This is a complex, complete, balanced, harmonious community of microbes that you're consuming. A commercial probiotic will only have species, a few species of bacteria that have been grown in a laboratory. They are isolated monocultures of species. Of course, they are weaker. Of course, every microbe has only a few functions that it can do for you. But when there is a whole community of them, trillions of different species, every one of them will contribute their little group of functions, their little jobs, and all together they will complete a myriad of jobs for you. They will do the whole thing for you. So, of course, fermented foods are in a completely different league, in a completely different category. However, I do use some probiotics for some cases in people because I work with a particular species of probiotics, and these are called therapeutic strength probiotics. The vast majority of probiotics on the market are not strong enough to make a real difference. They're just prophylactic. They're just for to help people to feel better. But there are therapeutic strength probiotics. They have aggressive species of microbes, which can make a real difference in the digestive system of the person. Every therapeutic strength probiotic will produce a so-called die-off reaction. When you start taking these probiotics, they will start killing off pathogenic microbes in your gut. And when these creatures die, they release toxins. And these are the toxins that make the person autistic, hyperactive, anxious, depressed, give them psoriasis, give them eczema, give them asthma, give them allergies, give them rheumatoid arthritis or whatever it is. So when you start taking these probiotics, the amount of toxicity that's released will often cause a flare-up in the symptoms. And that is called a die-off reaction. So every therapeutic strength probiotic, proper probiotic, will produce a reaction like that. Fermented foods will produce reactions like that. That is why people who never had fermented foods must not suddenly gorge on over half a jar of sauerkraut. Please don't do that.
Good to know.
Start with one teaspoon per day. See what happens first. Build it up gradually to control this die-off reaction.
So these therapeutic probiotics, are they only prescribed by doctors? Or can anyone buy them?
No, not at all. Not necessarily. They are available on the market. Because the nutritionists, osteopaths, naturopaths, and other alternative practitioners make it their job to study this market and to see what products are good quality and are worth taking and what products are not, it is a good idea to work with a professional.
Right. Okay. So basically we should try and, well, I know that there are obviously GAPS protocol trained individuals who people can reach out to, and they would be the people to go to if you wanted to go down the route of therapeutic probiotics, would they?
Absolutely. I have been training health practitioners for the last 10 years. We have thousands of certified GAPS practitioners around the world. These are very valuable people. I have a page on my website, gaps.me, where you will find the full list. They're listed by country. In America, they're listed by state, by county. So you will be able to find these professionals and they will be able to help you.
Okay, we'll look out for that, and I'll put that as well as a link. Now, the other thing I was going to ask you is, You know, there is an increase in incidence in babies born by cesarean, and you know, sometimes a cesarean birth is absolutely life-saving. Now, again, when you think about wanting to start a baby off in the absolute right way, obviously a cesarean is something that you might not wish for. What would you do if you are a person listening who is worried about having a cesarean birth, and how would you then deal with the baby subsequently to try and help them despite having that start to life?
Absolutely. Children, the research shows that children who were born by C-section have impoverished gut flora. They didn't get the full spectrum of microbes that come only from the birth canal of the mother. But of course, you need to understand that cesarean sections are life-saving. Giving birth to a child is the most dangerous thing a woman can do in her life. It is completely unpredictable. You can do everything in the best possible way. You can prepare in the best possible way, and then something happens. Before I became a neurologist, I trained as a gynecologist and obstetrician, and I worked in that area. So it really is can be very surprising. You can have a healthy, like a horse, woman coming in with perfectly normal pregnancy. Everything is perfectly normal, and then things go badly wrong. And indeed, before cesarean sections were invented and doctors perfected this procedure, a large percent of women were dying in child labor. It was a major number one cause of death amongst young women, unfortunately. So if you have to have a cesarean section, you go ahead and have it, because that might save you and save the baby. But when that happens, it is important to supplement the baby with beneficial flora. So the first thing and the most important thing is breastfeeding. Breast milk provides the right food for the right kind of microbes. And also the breast of the woman is populated by its own flora. The milk ducts in her breast have a rich microbial flora. There are microbes living in there. So the breast milk is probiotic. It will provide probiotic microbes for the baby. For many women who have abnormal gut flora, they know about it because they've had IBS for years, or they had allergies for years, or they had some other problems. So they know they've got abnormal gut flora. It is vital for a woman during pregnancy and during breastfeeding to stay on the GAPS diet. Please stay on the full GAPS diet. You don't need to do the introduction, because there are two varieties described in my book. One is called introduction diet. Another one is the full GAPS diet. A pregnant and breastfeeding mother should stay on the full GAPS diet. It is absolutely essential for every pregnant and breastfeeding woman to have some liver on a daily basis. Please do not listen to your mainstream doctor who will tell you not to eat liver. That comes from the false idea and a false research into vitamin A, because our food industry has been fortifying breakfast cereals, flour products, and other processed things with synthetic vitamin A. And as a result, they caused an excess of this vitamin A in the Western population, which is causing trouble. And as usual, our mainstream medicine, instead of telling people not to eat processed foods, to reduce exposure to this synthetic vitamin A, which can be damaging during pregnancy, can be damaging to fetus, can be damaging to the woman. It's not a good situation during pregnancy. So stay away from processed things during pregnancy if you want to avoid that synthetic vitamin A and its damaging effects. But unfortunately, as usual, our mainstream medicine, guided by the pharmaceutical industry, instead of telling people stop eating processed foods with synthetic vitamin A, tell them not to eat natural foods which contain natural vitamin A. Natural vitamin A is a completely different kettle of fish to that synthetic molecule that is put in processed foods, in breakfast cereals, breads, pastries, pasta, and the rest of it. It's a completely different molecule, and it is absolutely essential for every baby to develop properly, to develop proper skeletal structure, to develop proper facial structure. Our children are increasingly born with narrower and narrower faces, because the cause of that is a woman is not getting enough vitamin A, vitamin D, and other fat-soluble vitamins during pregnancy. If a woman is not getting enough of these vitamins, her baby will be born with malformed middle of the baby's face. As a result, the teeth will be crowded, we will need braces, the nasal passages will be narrow, causing all kinds of problems in the child. And in some children now, born in the last few years, I see more and more, children are born with closed up nasal passages.
Wow.
There aren't enough building materials to build the facial structure, the maxilla in the child, and the basis of the skull of the child, because the woman during pregnancy is not eating liver. Every woman in every traditional society for millennia was told to eat liver every single day during pregnancy. It was a must.
Wow.
It was not optional for every pregnant woman. And now our doctors are telling every woman, every pregnant woman, don't eat liver, that's dangerous, vitamin A. Stop eating breakfast cereals. Stop eating bread. Stop eating pasta. Stop eating cakes, biscuits, chocolate muffins, and the rest of it. And you will avoid synthetic vitamin A. But you must eat a piece of liver every single day when you're pregnant and when you are breastfeeding. There are delicious pâtés that can be done. If you don't like liver, just grilled or fried, you can buy delicious pâtés, goose liver pâté, duck liver pâté, pork liver pâté, lamb liver pâté, or you can make pâtés yourself. My book has some recipes, and you'll find lots of wonderful recipes online how to make liver pâtés. They're absolutely scrumptious, and if you eat some of that pâté every day, you're covered.
So I'm guessing, though, obviously, given what you were saying about industrial farming, you obviously need to make sure that it's organic. And are you satisfied that organic standards are kind of upheld, or is it just a case of you have to, it's the lesser of two evils?
Well, there are two questions here, and I'd like to cover both. They're very important. First of all, liver does not accumulate toxins. People think, oh, because liver deals with toxicity in the body, it must be toxic. Not at all. If our liver accumulated toxins, we would die after 3 months of our life in our modern world. Liver does not accumulate toxicity. It processes it and sends it off somewhere else, usually into the fat tissues, into your hips and your belly fat, to store the toxicity. So liver is clean. It is safe and clean to eat liver of any animal. Organics. Organic standards have been seriously compromised in the last 10 years, and we cannot trust organic label in the supermarkets anymore. That is a very sad news, I'm afraid, but that is what has happened. Because organic sector was growing so rapidly, and everybody wanted organics, the big agriculture wanted a piece of that pie. So they moved in, and because they are the ones that are controlling agricultural policies of our Western governments, they have corrupted and changed organic standards. We now have organic pesticides. Many practices that are used, which have no place in organic agriculture, are now considered to be acceptable in organic. So, and there are some horrifying statistics that we have from America, where it shows that 75% thereabouts of all chickens which are sold as organic in supermarkets are not organic at all.
Oh, wow.
They come from cows. And some 50% of organic, so-called labeled organic milk in supermarkets is not organic at all. And most so-called organic grain that is sold in the Western world comes from China.
So what do we do then? How on earth do we navigate this?
What do we do? We have to stop buying food in supermarkets. It really is an imperative now for anybody who cares about the health of their family and their personal health. We now have to go to the farmers' markets in our towns and cities. We need to talk to the farmers. We need to get their contact details. And we then need to take the next weekend to drive to that farm, visit it, talk to the farmers, see how the animals are kept, see how the vegetables are grown, see how the food is produced. See whether you can trust this farmer. Is it a good, trustworthy person? Can you trust this individual? You know, and we need to start buying food directly from the organic farms. Our Western governments are subsidizing big chemical agriculture, industrial agriculture. That is why it's thriving. They're subsidizing it. However, when it comes to organic, true organic farms, our Western governments are a pain and a curse upon them. Not only they don't help them and don't subsidize them, they make their lives difficult with their regulations and their examinations and the rest of it. The only organic farms that are really surviving are the ones that have a strong customer base. So if you make yourself their customer, if you drive out of the city and buy all your foods in some organic farm which you visited, examined, you've spoken to the people, you can trust these people. Not only you will serve your family well, and look after the health of yourself and your family, but you will also provide a livelihood for a good person, for a good farmer who is trying to survive in this difficult world and trying to produce proper quality food for you.
Now, on that, you mentioned that that's obviously a fantastic thing to do, and it's really important, I think, that we all start to take that kind of action, because it then means that that can strengthen and kill off the stuff that we don't want. But one of the things that you mentioned earlier is using activated charcoal to clean your teeth. Now, some people use activated charcoal to wash fruit and vegetables because they don't trust these organic labels. Is that something you ever do as kind of an extra level of precaution to take away some of these kind of toxins that can be present?
Well, there are many things that people do in the hope that they can leach some of these chemicals out. You can't really leach them out. Mm. They are in the flesh of the vegetables, in the flesh of the apples. So we have in this country, in England, in the beautiful, you know, good old England, you see lots and lots of old apple trees and plum trees in people's gardens. And people don't collect them.
Yeah.
Just fall on the ground and they go and buy the apples in the supermarket. It's quite funny. These kind of places, these kind of apples and plums are infinitely cleaner than anything you will buy in the supermarket, commercially produced, because a fruit needs to ripen on the tree. All commercial fruit, even from so-called organic farms, even if they are truly organic, is picked unripe and is likely to be grown on exhausted soils. So the nutritional value of that fruit and vegetable will be much, much lower than anything you will get from your own garden or your own apple tree or from the neighbor's apple tree. So make friends with people who have allotments. They always grow more than they can eat themselves. They are not certified organic, but you can talk to the person and you will know that their vegetables are much cleaner, much, much cleaner than anything you will buy in a supermarket with any label. And speak to people who have old orchards and have old apple trees and ask them, can I collect your apples? Is it okay if you will share that with me and I can pay you for that? You will get infinitely better quality.
That's really good advice. Now, one final question. When it comes to weaning your child, how do you approach this if you want to obviously build as healthy a microbiome as humanly possible?
Well, this part four in my GAPS book, Guardian Psychology Syndrome book, has a full chapter on how to wean a new baby in the family. From my point of view, vast majority of babies that are born today and will be born in the following years are GAPS. They are GAPS babies. We can't just go into the supermarket and get baby rice and get those jars and get processed milk to wean them. You can't do that because these things will feed pathogenic microbes, allow them to grow exclusively in the digestive system of the child and damage the integrity of the gut and just damage the child altogether. You have to cook everything at home that the child eats, and the whole diet is described in detail in that chapter.
Okay, we'll put a link onto that as well. Now, one final question. I could talk to you for hours, frankly, but in the interest of time, one final question. You talk about in your book using purified water, because obviously, unfortunately, the kind of water that we are exposed to is full of all kinds of things, like even, you know, birth control pills, all this kind of stuff. Now, how do you purify your water? Because there's also so many different products out there is offered as water purification, but it's quite difficult, to be honest, as a consumer to know what the best way to do it is. So what would you advise people who are looking to do this as part of their kind of day-to-day life?
I have a standard carbon filter under the sink, which is not very expensive. It costs some £100 or something, and it goes under your sink, and a separate tap comes through the work surface for this filtered water. It filters out fluoride, chlorine, pesticides, and the major nasties. The important thing that it doesn't alter the mineral composition of the water and doesn't alter the microbial composition of the water, because we need these things. There are many other more expensive devices on the market. I do not recommend reverse osmosis. I do not recommend distillation, because that turns the water dead. There are such things as a living water and a dead water. A living water has a crystal structure, a hexagonal crystal structure. The molecules of water arrange themselves in a special physical structure, which is essential for all the benefits of this water in your body. where if you use reverse osmosis or sterilize that water or distill that water, you've broken that structure, that water becomes dead. And it's actually very, very damaging for the human body because it doesn't have that structure. It will come into your body, it causes havoc, it causes a lot of biophysical damage on a nuclear level, on atomic level in the body. So I do not recommend this expensive purifiers. For an average consumer, for an average person, you know, who cannot invest thousands and thousands of pounds into filtration, just a standard carbon filter under the sink. Some of them come with two cartridges. One takes out excessive calcium, if you have that situation in your area. Another one takes out all the other nasties. That's quite enough. And the flow through this stuff is quite good. So you can make all your meat stock with it. You can make all your beverages. You can wash your fruit and vegetables with it and drink that water.
Amazing. Thank you. We'll put up a link for that as well. Dr. Natasha, I just want to thank you so much for all your insight. It's been super fascinating. And as I said to you, I'm a massive fan of your work anyway, and I'm sure this will be super interesting and useful for everyone listening. So thank you again so much for your time. I'll put up all the links on the show notes and also in the written form that we're going to do of this. And also there'll be links to your site so people can go and have a look, and we'll put up links to GAPS practitioners as well. So I just want to say thank you again so much for your time and insight.
That's a pleasure, and thank you for listening.